The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. With our broadband, your world is limitless. Live beyond.
It's coming up to 9:30. It's Oliver Callan here in for Ryan. Now, from Serial to The Staircase, Making a Murderer to Madeleine McCann, true crime podcasts and TV documentary series make detectives of all of us. But some take it a step further. Andrea Mara's new psychological thriller, The Sleeper Lies, tells the story of a true crime fan and armchair detective who soon begins to wonder if there is a link between her online sleuthing and her all-too-real stalker. Andrea joins us now to talk about the real life amateur sleuths who solve real life crimes and to explore our rising fascination with true crime podcasts and documentaries. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
And your dark mind.
Yes, yes.
So, I mean, I started reading The Sleeper Lies, your latest novel, last night. It is about Marianne, who's living on her own up in the Wicklow Mountains. It's the Beast from the East time. It's snowed in.
Yeah.
And she is one of these armchair detectives, online detectives. So
yeah.
When she spots some footsteps in the snow that are unexplained, her mind begins to wander.
Yeah, so it's like a secret hobby. So she lives on her own in the middle of nowhere in Wicklow, and she works from home as well. So she spends a lot of time on her own, but she is also an amateur sleuth or armchair detective. And she doesn't really like to talk about it because people don't understand why you would spend all your time sitting at your laptop trying to solve cold cases. It sounds
A big thing in America, though.
It's but huge, yeah.
Here we're a little bit cynical about that.
Don't
we kind of look a bit askew, a bit askance at someone.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, there's a forum in America called websleuths.com and it has over 100,000 members. So there are people who are just like you and me, but they sit down at night and go on their laptops and look up either really big famous cases that everybody knows about, like Madeleine McCann or JonBenet Ramsey, or they would look up smaller cases that nobody's ever heard of, because I suppose they might be the lower profile ones,
the
might
cold
be the ones
cases.
They might actually find out what happened. Exactly. And it's something that couldn't have been done before the internet, because prior to this, only police, law enforcement in any given country would have had access to any kind of information about crimes.
Yeah.
But now, I mean, OK, we don't have sensitive police files, obviously, but you can
not
go,
here, but probably in America, they are quite released,
to me,
aren't they?
Yeah, it looks to me like they have a lot more access over there to things that we wouldn't have access to over here. And you can look up crime scenes on Google Maps, and you can, you know, just go on Facebook and start trying to track somebody down that way. A lot of it is missing persons or unidentified murder victims. That's a lot of what they do.
So have any of these online detectives, have they ever come up with something that's cracked a case?
Yeah, now, not as often as you'd like, because obviously it'd be a great story if they could solve more crimes. That would make a great story. Yeah. But there are a couple of cases. So one of the most famous armchair detectives is a woman called Michelle McNamara, who has since sadly passed away. She wrote a book called I'll Be Gone in the Dark. It was about her attempts to identify the man she called the Golden State Killer.
Yeah.
So her book came out 2 years ago. She had already passed away at that stage. And about a month or two after her book came out, an arrest was made in that case. So a man called Joseph D'Angelo was arrested.
Now, and where was this?
This is over in America. So he was active on the West Coast of America for, I think, all through the 70s and 80s, maybe into the 90s. So it was a really, really old case spanning decades and many, many counties in that part of America, in California. And they made the arrest a month or two after her book came out. So obviously you'd love to think that her book
that
and the other internet sleuths had a hand in it. Nobody has ever said that is the case. How they actually found him in the end was through the internet, as it happens, because, you know, these databases for finding your ancestors and finding out where you're from, like Ancestry.com and 23andMe. They used one of those called GEDmatch to upload a DNA profile of a suspect from a crime scene, and they got a match. And that's how they found the guy. So be careful what you're putting in these DNA databases in case you've committed a long ago crime that you've forgotten about.
Or planning one.
Yes, exactly.
I suppose what they do if they don't crack the case itself is they whip up enough information and interest in an old case. And that has happened quite a lot, particularly in podcasts, hasn't it? I mean, the first series of Serial that people might have listened to on podcast, may not, kind of directly led to a reopening of the case.
Yeah, exactly. Because same with the teacher's pet in Australia, that led to an arrest. So it does, it puts it all in the public eye. So they may not necessarily, as you say, they may not uncover the clue that solves the case, even though that's what they really want to do. But it gets enough public interest that either the case gets more attention by law enforcement, or what also happens is listeners contact the person running the podcast and say, actually, I was there back then and the police never interviewed me, and come forward with new information. So that happened in both Serial and Teacher's Pet.
And in the Netflix series, Don't F with Cats.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, they actually identified the guy. So I don't want to spoil it for people who haven't seen it, but it's a really, really good 3-part Netflix series. And there was someone posting horrible videos online, and these amateur sleuths came together because they were looking at the videos going, okay, look, there's a vacuum cleaner in the corner of the room, and I've gone on this vacuum cleaner forum. There is actually such a thing as a vacuum cleaner forum. And this type of model is X, Y, and Z, and only available in the United States. So now we can narrow it down to the entire United States. But they really did look at his speech patterns in his comments on various websites, right, and they were able to narrow it down. And these amateur sleuths worked out who the guy is, and they were right, and he is in jail. Now, unfortunately, the police didn't listen to them, but they did identify him. So there is some merit to
that. That's one
really
direct case there. Between all these podcasts and Netflix documentaries, I'm kind of hooked myself. Making a Murderer, absolutely stuck on it. Dirty John, the podcast, mm-hmm. S-Town, all of these. Yeah. I mean, what is it about? What is it about our psyches that we're so obsessed with all these horrible cases?
I think there's few things there. I think one of it is a kind of a self-protection, like this magical thinking self-defense. So if we're reading about it or watching it or listening to it, in a way we're warding off evil. Now, I kind of always thought that myself, but thought that was maybe a little odd. And then I started listening to a podcast called My Favorite Murder.
Yes.
And the co-hosts of that, Georgia and Karen, that's exactly what they say. They're running this podcast so that they can ward off evil, and that the more they talk
about... Or prepare
about,
themselves, almost arm themselves with the information that they can spot a...
Yeah. The more you know about it, the safer you are. So, and I think in a more logical way as well, there's a kind of a rationale to it, that if you know why something happened or how it happened, you can say, well, that couldn't happen to me because I would not leave my child alone at night, or I wouldn't walk into the woods in the middle of the night. So you kind of protect yourself that way.
And is there a little bit of... the thrill of experiencing fear without the consequences.
Exactly. So it's like going on a roller coaster or watching Nightmare on Elm Street. It's like getting the fear and the horror, but you know the episode is going to end in 42 minutes and you can go back to your normal life and you're safe at home in your house.
Now, in the world of fiction, which is where you're operating, you can have a bit of fun and nobody is actually getting hurt. But in true crime podcasts, I mean, there are victims here, and just the nature of things, because victims happen to be a little bit boring because they're just innocent people in the wrong place at the wrong time often, whereas the villains like the Ted Bundys and so on get glamorised in a way. And are we glamorising the villain and desensitising ourselves to horrible crimes?
Yeah, I think there is an element of that. I find sometimes when I'm listening to some of the US podcasts, and particularly My Favourite Murder, which isn't really, it's not for the sensitive, it's quite irreverent. And I do often think, oh my God, I really hope no relatives of the victims are listening to this. Now, I assume if somebody has been through something awful like that, they're not listening to podcasts on cold cases. So,
but of course, I can hear about it from someone else.
Yeah, and I definitely, there were episodes of My Favourite Murder where I kind of switched off because I was like, no, this is too much. Mm. And especially anything involving kids, I just thought, no, I don't want to listen to this. So there's an Irish kind of version called The Creep Dive, which is actually really, really good. The Creep Dive. And it's not about, it doesn't glamorise the killers, and it's not insensitive to the victims. And it's more about just crazy cases and hoaxes and internet hoaxes and deep diving into the stories where you kind of see a headline and go, that's bizarre. And then they take a deep dive into it. And that is very, very funny and not insensitive to victims.
Because a lot of the podcasts I found listening to the likes of Serial and Up and Vanished, which was one in America as well, that they were very, you know, editorialized. And, you know, there was no editor really involved, kind of keeping everything objective. They were following and pursuing a particular line here and there. And one of the best ones as a result of that was made in, I think it was Amazon series West Cork, which is on the case of Sophie Toscan du Plantier. Mm-hmm. And it was just very objectively and dispassionately reported in a kind of a story that has developed a lot of chaos over the years. And it was one that it kind of gave us a helicopter view of the entire story. Yeah, that was one of the best quality ones.
Yeah, I thought West Cork, and I liked Serial to that end too, in that I felt that Sarah Koenig, the presenter there, wasn't tabloidy about it. She wasn't gushing. She was very rational and presenting all the facts on all sides and making us ask
questions.
And very
aware of the victim as well.
Yeah, definitely. Whereas some of them have felt very gushing and almost kind of about the host getting excited about being at the centre of the story more than anything else.
Now, I mean, since Agatha Christie and everything, we've all been fascinated of trying to solve crimes and so on. But are we seeing this true crime content? Why are we seeing such a spike in it at the moment?
I think that the internet enables it. So until we had the ability to write blog posts and like anybody can now run their own podcast, until we could do that, it wasn't possible to have all this true crime content all over the place. And I think when something becomes popular, so with Netflix bringing it mainstream, then there's a bigger audience. And then in turn, there's more money to make more high quality content. But there's also the 24-hour news cycle. So we know about the true crime cases as soon as they happen, much more than we would have in the past. So I think it's all those things coming together have made it on trend at the moment as such.
It's trickier in Ireland, though, isn't it? Because, you know, in America, they're able to kind of put out their opinions online, whereas and implicate people who are not charged or even suspected officially. Mm. Whereas in Ireland, we have to be a lot more careful about that. We have very different rules.
It's fascinating watching the American stuff. I mean, we just watched a show called The Loudest Voice, which isn't, I suppose it's true crime in a sense. It's about the guy who found Roger Ailes, who founded Fox News.
Yeah.
And you're
Russell
watching
Crowe.
It going, oh my God. And a bit like the O.J. Simpson series they did a few years ago. Like, these are all real people who are still alive and they're allowed to have this dramatization of what happened. It's incredible. I can't imagine seeing an Irish version
of that.
You
wouldn't get away with that around here,
not
as they say.
At all. No chance.
How far is too far if you're an online detective?
I think if you've got your own murder wall in your bedroom, you've gone too far.
But the red threads.
Yeah, and your whiteboard.
Have you come across
pins.
People like that? I mean, you researched a book. Your character Marianne is quite an addicted online sleuth.
Yeah,
Did you find people like that?
I decided she was an online sleuth when I read about Michelle McNamara. So I knew in The Sleeper Lies Marianne was already living on her own in the middle of nowhere. But then when I read about Michelle McNamara, I thought, oh my God, perfect job for someone living in a creepy house would be online sleuth. So Michelle McNamara is the king of them all. And she would literally sit in her bed on her laptop for hours and hours research. It looks to me reading the book that is all she did in her latter years. So she's probably the biggest example. But I suppose, I mean, if Web Sleuths has over 100,000 members, there probably are people quietly dedicating all their time to doing this. And like in the Netflix series Hunting an Internet Killer that you mentioned, Don't F with Cats, the people in that were saying they were a little bit embarrassed about, one of the girls was saying she's a bit embarrassed about going into her perfectly normal job, but admitting then that, okay, when I go home, I start investigating cases on the internet.
Right, so down that black hole.
Who knows what everybody's doing at home, really.
A text comes in to us, Andrea. Oliver, listening to Andrea, I need to know, in what part of the Wicklow Mountains does that character in the book get good internet coverage?
Oh my God, she must live in this
I'm
special
sure
pod. She lives near a fictional version of Roundwood. So there must be just a really good spot near Roundwood
there
where you get
spots.
Internet access.
If you go hill walking there, you can suddenly get a good spike in your 3G.
She lives on that hill.
The Sleeper Lies is what the book is called. I mean, we don't give in much, but there is twists and turns.
Yes. Of
and
course.
Darkness in there. And it's out this week.
It is out on Thursday, which is in 2 days.
Have you stopped all of your internet sleuthing?
No, I'm still sleuthing, still listening to podcasts all the time, still watching all the Netflix series, and have to remind myself every now and then the book is done and I can stop, but I can't stop.
So what is it like in your home at the moment? Are you have to be dragged away from your laptop?
Well, I've roped my husband in. He's my chief researcher and he may get arrested at some point if anyone looks up his Google search history and all his questions about merger and untraceable poisons and stuff. Okay. So I have that card in my back pocket if he ever misbehaves.
And the book is rather lovely. It's dedicated to your father.
Yes, yeah. So my dad is amazing. I could go on forever, but sure, everybody thinks their own dad is amazing. But it's dedicated to him because he has always been into reading, and me and my three sisters are huge readers, and I guess that all comes from somewhere, doesn't it? If you're brought up in a house full of books, it pays off.
That was where the encouragement came to.
Yeah.
Because you were a blogger initially, weren't you?
Yeah. And my dad said, I said, how am I going to write this book when I signed my book deal and then had to write a book? And he was like, how do you eat an elephant? And I was looking at him going, I don't know how you eat an elephant. I need to know how to write a book. And he said, one bite at a time. And it just calmed me down and I did it. So, yeah.
You did it and it's on. It's nice to have a look at that product then.
Yeah.
Is it your third?
This is my third. So it was the first one that was one bite at a time. So, yeah.
Well, Andrea, Mara, thank you very much for coming in to us. The Sleeper Lies is out now in all good bookshops. Maybe some terrible ones as well.
I'll take that. That's fine too.
The text is 51551, ryan@rte.ie. Back after these.